Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. We are hanging out with the cross-country crew. We've got sort of East Coast. I'm not really East Coast, but like closer East Coast. Aaron is absolutely West Coast. And you guys listening are stuck in the middle of a podcast. And how's it going? Mr. Aaron?
It's going well. It's going well. And I always thought that Ohio was the East Coast. Even as a kid in Minnesota, it seemed like the East.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if that's just my bias, but
we're on East Coast time zone. It's a 60-minute flight to New York, a 65-minute flight to Washington, D.C. I've taken both of those flights many times. So we're definitely more East Coast than, like, say, smack dab in the middle, but we're not, you know, I can't drive to the ocean that close to the East Coast. So
right.
When we hung up last time, Aaron, you were about to do some endpoint related conversations and you were supposed to do some homework or really probably just attend and come back and kind of tell us the high level learnings. That way people can learn more and obviously they can go back and watch that little shindig here. But what, it was endpoint, it was security, it was everybody's working remotely. So, you know, bring it on home for us.
Some super fascinating things came out of that conversation, and thanks if any listeners attended. It was interesting. You know, we talked through just sort of best practices and what we know, and so on that level, it was relatively ordinary. And part of the narrative is, you know, kind of balancing this productivity with security thing. You know, can you do it without a VPN? And how much does that kind of bring you to your knees? When do you need a hosted virtual desktop what security scenarios really necessitate that? Mm-hmm. And there certainly are some, but there are a lot of ways to work around that as well. It's certainly kind of industry related and things like that. But one of the most fascinating data points that came out of this, and it's not super scientific, but we learned that 50% of the attendees expect that some level of their work from home will be permanent. Wow. Interestingly as well, about a third thought that they will be essentially 100% returned to the office.
Really?
So it was sort of an interesting disparity that lots of kind of permanent change, but also a good chunk of definitely going back 100%. So I didn't exactly see that one coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Microsoft actually just announced, I think it was late last week. Now, the blanket statement is that everybody can work from home forever, but there's a lot of caveats to that, because obviously people who need to go into data centers can't work from home all the time. But, you know, if your role allows it, those workers are going to be doing that. So it's interesting to hear, your data points about how many people think they are actually going to be back into the office or can, you know, truly migrate to that style of work.
Yeah, part of it, I think, is industry driven, right? If you're in construction, you have to show up and swing the hammer. If you are in healthcare, right, telemedicine only will go so far. Mm-hmm. On and on and on, right? A number of industries implicated in this kind of have to be there. For the rest, I think they're really looking long and hard at it. And I think my friends who work at Microsoft, I've had conversations with them, and they, you know, we're kind of needling management mm-hmm. before the pandemic about making this kind of change. And at the time, there was this pendulum swing. And remember when Marissa Meyer went and took over, was it Yahoo? She became CEO and had this like groundbreaking, everyone show up at the office. Mm-hmm. And it was so disruptive. And then everyone else followed, all these other organizations. I remember famously Best Buy. You know, they had footage of their office and you know, Aeron chairs, acres of Aeron chairs in cubicles that were empty. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, everyone was coming back to work. So we've seen that pendulum go that way. Now it seems like it's going back the other way. So my friends initially started with a kind of conditional, yes, you can, obviously, we're all working remotely anyway, let's try this and let's see if we can make this a permanent thing. Quickly for them, you know, weeks and weeks, you know, a couple months before this announcement last week, solid green on, yeah, this is no problem. And it's sort of going to be the new normal.
I think there's also sort of an interesting dynamic too about how your office is arranged. I love to poke fun at Microsoft for this because they are spending, I think it's in the billions of dollars, to revamp their campus to an open office style layout, which is probably the worst style of layout for a pandemic. And so that was probably part of the reason we're like, yeah, just work from home because we can't cram 90 people into this area like we used to. But then my wife, on the other hand, works in higher ed and everybody has an office. Everybody can go shut their door and be isolated and be in the building. And they're much more, granted, she's only going into the office like, we'll say 1.5 days a week, but that type of arrangement is much more like sustainable than, say, what Microsoft is doing.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. Microsoft forever had an individual office culture. And, you know, you were sort of distinguished on whether you had your own or you had to share. And then about 6 or 7 or so years ago, when they were remodeling some of the old campus and or older campus buildings, they went to these lettered pods where teams worked together, and that was kind of open office with focus rooms and you know, interestingly configured meeting rooms, couches in some areas, you know, the mega sized touch screen Surface Magic
The Surface
displays and
Hub.
all that. Oh, it's Surface Hub, absolutely to the moon, right? The 80 inchers in the whole business. This was a couple of years ago, so that was totally fun. But yeah, definitely now open office, but it does cause a bit of a head scratcher as to how this is going to work in the long term. But I think it's the right move. It's way more efficient, right? Way more bodies in the same square footage. But herein lies the problem for the pandemics. But now that it's all work from home, you know, I don't know how many takers there are going to be. I know a lot of teams really value that collaboration and, you know, in-person interaction. Of course, none of us are getting that either way now, but yeah, we'll see where it goes.
I think that's the appropriate way to describe it. And we'll see how things morph. I fully agree with you. There's definite value in that collaborative experience. Like, let's go sit in the boardroom and we're not leaving until this problem is solved type experience. It's not always that extreme. But I can tell you, and my wife is I've been watching her because I've been working home from home now for about 5 years, and she kind of just got tossed into this like everybody else. And she realized, much like most people do, it's like you're really productive at home for like 4 hours, and you get everything done you would normally, and then you've got an additional 4 hours to, you know, then you realize how much you're like just, you know, waffling around at work. But those engagements, and it kind of, you know, there's a definitely a hybrid scenario that I think is going to be optimal at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think so too. I was thinking about some people that I'm on a board with, and I've, you know, a couple of the newer ones I've never met in person, you know, and we've talked about employees that we've hired that I have yet to meet. But these other folks, you know, you want to get to know them, and it's like, well, I don't know what kind of cell phone they carry. You know, are they an iOS person, are they an Android person? You know, what kind of PC they use? You know, and the way they use that tells you a lot about
It
people,
does, it really
right? So
does.
not necessarily at this, oh, water cooler, yeah, but even like kind of the nonverbal, but I don't know. There's just a way you learn, and then the way I would frame things or the context I would put around things might be different, and that might help the way that we would communicate. There are all these things that I've been thinking about, especially now that, you know, months ago when all this started, we were ch talking about, and not joking, but kind of placing kind of anecdotal wagers on what's going to happen and how long this is going to last and whether everything will be virtual. Well, now it's here and it's not going to end anytime soon. And so there is an element of new normal here. And so what does that mean? I mean, for those of us in IT, it's, I would say, been overall a good thing. For us in endpoint IT, it's been particularly powerful, right? News today of PC sales being the old way, double digit growth, you know, and projections that it's going to continue, or at least hang on for some years. So we always joke that the PC's not dead, and you know, have joked about it dying 5 times and it's still not dead. And here we are, right? And living it. So yeah, it's sort of interesting. But yeah, lots of interesting things as we've considered not only sort of the long-term work from home and the security aspect of it, but you know, just this whole context of how we're going to continue functioning right in the new normal.
It's not every week that we get to talk about the out-of-box experience changing in Windows 10, but
right.
somehow within the past like 2 weeks, we are getting one official, one unofficial change. The first one is that Microsoft is changing the update or out-of-box experience, that's what OOBE stands for, to allow you to sort of tick a box and customize your install. I'm trying to figure out if this is just like just surface level stuff or like, you know, what this is actually doing.
I looked at that. It looks like, well, first of all, for if I actually was still an IT person,
mm-hmm.
and I pretend to be, but I haven't really done that work except for tuning up my own stuff when stuff breaks or volunteering an opinion, policy wise. All of this stuff would be done programmatically.
Yeah.
I mean, and I would assume that you can, this is all scriptable, switchable stuff.
We can only hope.
I haven't validated that, right? We don't know, yeah. But I would have to assume there's controls in there somewhere that to do it programmatically, that's how it's going to be done,
mm-hmm.
right? For those of us who do this at any degree of scale. So who is this targeted to? Is this to we're talking about the new normal and all these people are getting PCs at home and the work one's so old or it doesn't have whatever bells and whistles I prefer and policy allows me to use my own. So at a BYO kind of level, then this might be helpful, right?
Right.
That might be good. But for those of us who do this professionally, you know, this is all going to be driven that way. Is it useful to have sort of a choose your own adventure with, you know, 8 or 12 presets for
yeah.
a knowledge worker scenario versus a home gaming scenario versus an entertainment, whatever it ends up being. That might be all right. That it, you know, it's almost like, you know, in cars, you've got like comfort, sport,
yeah.
whatever settings for driving, you know, it kind of presets the throttle and the brakes and
mm-hmm.
whatever you're, you know. I imagine it's akin. In fact, the screens that we've seen the demo of show that to some
yeah.
extent. Right? So, no. I don't think it's necessarily earth shattering, but it is
yeah.
interesting to see. And some of it's going 10x back into 10.
Yes. See, that's
I mean,
the
that's
other
sort
big
of
one. That's the super interesting one. The super quick highlight for people who aren't aware, in the latest Insider build, if you throw some switches in the registry, which don't do haphazardly because you will absolutely wreck
right.
your install. I know from personal experience multiple times. I never heed my own advice. Anyways, some of the 10x out-of-box experience has now moved to the Windows 10 iteration, and it's a much more like visually friendly, I think maybe is a way to describe it. It's not that blue screen of like checkboxes. So we'll see how long that migration takes.
Feeling,
yeah.
You know, which again might play to this. And I think in this case, you know, the 10X team did something interesting that had a nice user experience. They probably got a lot of really positive feedback and
mm-hmm.
said, hey, what if we drive this over into Windows 10? From my interactions with people in that orbit, it seems like there is a lot of that kind of conversation going on. There's so, you know, we talk about, oh, Windows and there's all this work, but you think about it and there is this monumental engineering effort, but now it's almost as though Windows has multiplied when you take into account 10X and all the form factors of devices
yeah.
it's landing on. The landscape for this is getting way, way bigger. And so the job of these people who drive and manage this is multiplying as well, which is almost unfathomable. So taken together, then you're in this landscape where you have more sort of variants of operating system landing on more device types.
Mm-hmm.
And so the opportunities for this kind of cross-pollination at a kind of capability and feature level is going to get really interesting. So my hunch is probably more of this in the future, not less.
Yeah,
if I were to place a bet.
Yep, I think you're right. You know, this is anecdotal, but it seems like Microsoft is kind of, for a while there, like Windows just kind of like just stagnated and got a little boring and like it didn't feel like they had a lot of effort behind it. And all of a sudden it feels like that fire has been reignited and they're really throwing some effort into it and not like gimmicky features, but they're really trying to fundamentally update and refresh it. And I'm optimistic, as I'd like to be in 2020, that things are going to get more fun going forward.
I think that's a fair assessment. And I think that, we all should expect that, especially if this recent prognostication on the PC growth in sales is true, right?
Yep.
There's reason for Microsoft to not reinvest, but further the investment. I mean, there's always been a huge investment, always been a wildly profitable business for Microsoft, but now it's taking that even farther, giving more incentive to keep that vibrant.
Yeah. And then, Aaron, wrapping up the back of the book here, we got an interesting reader question. I'm going to be posing this question to all of the Enterprise Dish co-hosts because I think it's applicable depending on, what you're doing. Anyways, we got a question in asking about how you use passwords in your office. Do you use a password manager? Are people authenticating by themselves? Are you using biometric? Some people are going completely passwordless. I'm curious, just, what does Smart Deploy do and what is your approach?
We have certainly a decisive position on this, and this is one of the things that we did talk about in the webcast. And we didn't even get into the detail that I would have liked because just time didn't permit. Our IT director, who's now moved into more of a DevOps role, really bright Aussie, great guy. Had this really insightful presentation that he gave to the all employees as a part of our annual security training that we do, because it's a very good idea. If you don't do it, everybody, a good thing to do, not very hard to put together. In fact, if you want, ping me on whatever Twitter or whatever, and I'm happy to share with you the slides that we
Oh, that'd be
use.
awesome.
Absolutely. Basically, NIST, which is like National Institute on Standards and something else, released a new publication, and I wrote it down because this is so important to everyone. It's 800-63B, and it basically debunks this notion that you should have the most complex password possible and you should change it every so often. The new guidance is use a passphrase. And that passphrase should be natural language mostly, something memorable to you with maybe a couple not spelled right things, and that is going to be a much more difficult to crack password. And so we sometimes go to how secure is my password.net and test, how many years it would take all of the data centers in the world to crack your password. For many of them, it's seconds. But since it's doing some of these changes, it's like thousands of years, right?
Interesting.
So it is a superior way to go about this. One permanent passphrase that you can remember that would be way more difficult for anyone to crack is the better way to go, no question. Biometrics is really, for most of our organization, a personal decision. If your device has that capability, we leave it up to end users to make a decision on whether they take that anywhere with, whatever other settings have to be modified, Windows Hello or what have you. So we do allow some discretion on use of that, but it still goes back to the core password itself and that important use of the passphrase.
Interesting. I wonder if that's because they've determined that length is more important potentially than complexity. And that's why, like, that phrase probably makes more sense.
Yeah, they detail it all out, and it's sort of interesting what the kind of practical hackability of this is. And sort of what the real head scratcher for me on this is, why more extremely security sensitive organizations and industries aren't snapping to this faster. Why is my banking app still telling me to use only like five different special characters? Like, I'm limited. I can't use certain things. And I get that probably the platform it's running on can't interpret semicolons because that could be something else. But still, like, I this is such an easy change to make, right? And so we don't, the nice thing is, we don't challenge people to change their passwords anymore on any cadence. You set it the right way on first, kind of entry into the system, and it's yours forever. And that's the policy. And it's great. It's been a very positive change to the organization for sure.
That's good. That's good to hear. For people who do want to reach out to Aaron, we'll include his, if you're watching on the website, his link down in the description below. You can click that and shoot him a tweet, and that should hopefully open up that avenue. But Aaron, we very much appreciate your time. It's been I'm overusing interesting times, but it's hard to get away from it.
There's no doubt. There is no doubt. And you know, it's fun to have this forum to be able to talk about this as it goes. And it's been interesting to look back, right? I mean, it would be kind of interesting, I think, if people are new to this podcast, to listen back to, you know, February, March, when we were first kind of thinking about how this was going to go. But yes, it will continue to be a good
For
ride, a good
multiple
listen.
reasons, I'm looking forward to as we all make that transition back into the office. And that's going to kick off a whole series of style of podcasts about people, you know, because it's going to be slowly moving and moving back and forth. And you've got devices that were, you know, hopefully less than a year outside the firewall coming back in, and like just opens up a whole can of complexity that will just keep us, you know, flowing with content for the foreseeable future, at least.
You think so?
So, to everybody else, thank you for tuning in. If you're not subscribed already, you can find those links down below. And Aaron, thank you for taking time out of your busy day. And everybody else, we'll catch all of you right back here next time.